Good morning. Let's see, this is Sunday, August 17th. We are continuing our study of this wonderful book, The Master Speaks. And we're on Chapter 2, Reality of Spirit. It gives you a couple of exercises in here, ones that he's given before. Maybe you'll see them for the first time. He begins with, "The most important part of our work is finding the answer to the question, what is God? So long as we think of God as some kind of a Superman sitting on a cloud, or a man on a cross, or some unknown and mysterious being, we do not bring even a small amount of spiritual power into our experience. Spiritual power being that which does the healing. Gratitude, appreciation, and recognition are a natural part of spiritual revelation and realization. Nevertheless, we might repeat over and over, thank you, Father, from now until doomsday, but unless we actually understand what God is, who it is, and what it is that we are thanking, and why we are thanking it, such outward expression is of little value. What is it that we are acknowledging? What is it that we are thinking about? What is it we are seeking as the source and foundation of our unfoldment? God. But what is God? For thousands of years, God has been considered as something separate and apart from us. All right, so that's a belief that we in this work have to overcome. A belief we've entertained for thousands of years. There's me and there's God. There's planet Earth, the Milky Way, the universe, and there's God. Today, however, we are no longer willing to accept a far-off God, because we have come to understand that God is the soul of our being. God is the mind, the spirit, the very substance of which we are formed. God is the center of our being. God is the infinite consciousness of our being. Our thank you, Father, is therefore not only an expression of gratitude, but it is a recognition and realization that the Father, or God, is the divine consciousness of our very own being. Now, those are pretty words to read. They're quite lovely. God is the divine consciousness of my very own being. And so we can have a conscious contact with that sentence. God is the divine consciousness of our very own being. But it is useless. That won't heal anything, because I agree with that statement. What will that heal? someone calls me, they send me an email and say they need help with their family. So I turn within and I repeat this: God is the divine consciousness of my very own being. Maybe I repeat it 20, 30, 50 times. What will it heal? You should know as well as I do, it won't heal anything or anyone. Something else is needed, something more, something you're not seeing with your eyes, and you won't see with your eyes. What is it? Where is it? How do I get it? He's going to tell you, and if you pay attention and you catch it, you will have the answer. The value of that recognition is that whatever we find to be true of God is universally true. It is true of us, and it is true about every individual, everywhere, at all times. His mercy endureth forever. This truth is universal and eternal throughout all generations. Whether we are thinking of people who, to our human sense of things, have passed on, or whether we are thinking of people who are now on earth, or those who are yet to come. Remember this: God is their very own consciousness, and they are always under divine protection, divine guidance, and divine illumination. We have no personal responsibility, therefore, toward them. To understand what God is to see God as the very life of individual being. If we realize God is the life of individual being, we would never again be concerned about whether anyone is, to appearance, alive or dead, because we would know and understand life as the only reality. The conscious awareness of the presence of God is necessary. This leads us to another very important element in this work. The only benefit we derive from any truth teaching is through the activity of our own consciousness. Therefore, unless we understand every word of truth that we declare, we are deriving no benefit from it. We must be consciously aware of the truth of every statement we use. Now, listen to this. We must be consciously aware of the truth of every statement we use. So if you go into meditation and you're using the statement, that God is the divine consciousness of our very own being, to use that statement, you must be consciously aware of it. That means you must have the feel of it. The divine consciousness of my very own being is God. I must have the feel of that. The feel of that is what heals. Not the discussion about that. The feel of that. We must not be satisfied to be human beings walking up and down the street believing that afar off somewhere there is a God with whom we can leave our problem. To say glibly, "Oh well, I'm going to leave it to God," as if there were a God out there to whom we could shift our problems, is of little value. But we can leave every problem to God. When, through a correct understanding of the revelation of truth, we rise to an understanding of the true nature and character of God. When we have a conscious awareness of the truth of being, God becomes the very activity of our being, and we can then leave everything to God. Now, pay attention to how many times in this chapter he says you must have the conscious awareness. Conscious awareness is necessary. We must be consciously aware of every statement we use. When we have a conscious awareness of the truth of being, God becomes the very activity of our being. In themselves, the statements, "Thank you, Father," or "I and my Father are one," are of no value. But the conscious awareness, there it is again, our conscious awareness of the meaning of those statements makes them God power in our experience. Consciousness is God. Your consciousness and my consciousness, one infinite, indivisible consciousness, which appears individually as your consciousness and mine. This is God. It is the activity of your consciousness and mine which results in the fruitage of our harmonious daily experience. We cannot sit with a dull, sleepy, or thoughtless mind and believe that there is a God power acting somewhere for us. God power is the activity of our consciousness. This God power appears as the activity of our consciousness. God power is our consciousness at work, and it is our consciousness when it is imbued with truth, an awareness of truth, and not merely the declaration of truth. Got to have the awareness. It is on this very point that truth students have made some of their greatest blunders. They have believed that the recitation of these truths is a virtue or has power. This is an incorrect assumption. It is not the activity of the human mind that is power. It is the consciousness imbued with the knowledge of truth that is power. Now, it's not your intellectually understanding. How many times must we say this? It's not your intellectual understanding of these truths. It's not your ability to string them together. God is my very own consciousness. I and my Father are one. That's not going to do anything. You can repeat it, 40 or 50 times a day, every day, for the rest of your existence, and they will not have power. Jesus said, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." He did not simply say, "The truth will make you free." He could have said that. A study of the words of the Master shows how sparing he was in his use of words, and how very careful he was in his choice of words. He could have saved several words by saying, "The truth will make you free," but he did not do that. He went to the trouble of saying, "Know the truth, and the truth will make you free." But I'm telling you, this knowing is not with the mind. This knowing has to be a conscious awareness. I'm going to hammer that and hammer that and hammer that home until you begin to get it, until you see the difference, until you know the truth through your conscious awareness or your spiritual discernment. See, spiritual discernment is knowing the truth the right way, the correct way. Repeating it to yourself in your mind, knowing this truth intellectually, will avail nothing. He could have saved several words by saying, "The truth will make you free," but he didn't do that. Know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. If we are to follow his teaching, we must become aware of the meaning of the truths that we read and declare, and make these truths an active part of our consciousness, of our conscious awareness. Then they bring a feel with them, and that feel is the power made manifest. So what heals? The conscious awareness of a truth, of the truth. The conscious awareness brings the actual feel of I and the Father are one. What does that oneness feel like? The conscious awareness of that one is the healer. That's what does the healing. That's what has the power. So, they bring a feel with them, and that feel is the power made manifest. Since Spirit is God, Spirit is real. Spirit is vital, alive. Spirit is almost. Spirit is totality. But although this is true, there must be a conscious awareness of the reality of Spirit. In that conscious awareness, we have the power that produces the harmonies of our daily experience. And so there it is. That's the whole chapter in a couple of pages. The whole answer is in the conscious awareness of Spirit, the conscious awareness of God, the conscious awareness of truth, the conscious awareness of life, the conscious awareness of immortality, the conscious awareness of eternality, the conscious awareness of divine consciousness. It is the conscious awareness which results in healing. The conscious thinking results in thinking, but no healing. right, so let's continue. Even before 1492, the oceans existed, and beyond the seas, rich and fertile lands. But to those who believed the world was flat, to those who accepted appearances for reality, the total extent of the ocean was only about eight miles. They looked out and saw where the sky and the ocean met, and of course, seeing that, they believed that they could not go beyond that point. This limited sense, based wholly on appearances, actually bound them to the limitation of their own little country and the waters nearby. All this time, in reality, there was no such limitation. Imagine that. Let's say you live on the west coast of some nation and you're looking out at the water and the sun is setting and you know you can't go past that sun, that sunset. If you do, you'll drop off into space, or whatever it was they thought was there. And they lived that way for thousands of years, believing that. And now we've lived for thousands of years believing that God is separate from our being. And we shake our head when we think of those early civilization that wouldn't get on a sailboat. I wonder who's shaking their heads at us because we still have a God separate and apart. All this time, in reality, there was no such limitation. Never once did the sky touch the water. The oceans, the seven seas, were always open and free for travel. And yet, for centuries, every person sat in his little corner, a prisoner to the idea of the skies meeting with the ocean in the distant horizon. All of this was changed by one man. Who was not blinded by appearances, but who, in turning away from appearances, reached the conclusion that the world was not flat. The world was round. Imagine that first ship that took off, or ships, the Nino, Santa Maria, what's the middle one? Anyway, you know, I didn't really pay that much attention in history class. Nino, Pinto, and Santa Maria, something like that. All right. Imagine being on one of those first ships taking off. You're waving goodbye to your relatives. You don't know what's over the horizon. You're afraid that Christopher may be wrong. And you're going to get swallowed by something horrible over the edge. Or you're just going to fly off into space. Of course, if the world is round, the sky does not come down and touch the water, nor does the water rise up to the sky. The sky is always in its own place, and the water is in its own place. Neither one is a barrier to the other. That one man, through the activity of consciousness, through his unlimited vision, refused to be hypnotized by everybody else's belief. He, able to think independently, unhypnotized and free, caught the vision, which enabled him to sail forth, opening up new worlds. So it is with us. If we sit back and give credence to the beliefs of the world just because people have believed them since time began, then we too are limited. Today, most of us are limited by our sense of body to believe that wherever we are at this moment is the extent of our being. Actually, that limitation has as little foundation as the limitation imposed on those who believed the earth was flat. A few have had the actual realization that they are not confined to a body. In that realization, they can instantaneously be anywhere in the world. As a matter of fact, they are already there, only not consciously aware of it. We, as infinite individual consciousness, can be anywhere and everywhere in this world, but we have not as yet gained the conscious awareness of that fact. And there it is again. We can entertain that fact. Well, my consciousness is everywhere present. My consciousness is omnipresence. But that won't do me any good. Once again, I need the conscious awareness of it, which brings the feel of it, which brings the power of it. Conscious awareness is God. Conscious awareness is consciousness. Consciousness is God. Okay, let's see. It should not take very long to prove that we are not in the body. And here is the exercise of the infinite way. Let us look at our own feet and ask ourselves two questions. Is that foot I? Or is that foot mine? As I look down there, I'm not down there. So what is that? That's a foot, my foot. I use it to walk around, to kick a kickball, climb up the stairs. Let us wait until we have a distinct answer within ourselves. Let us not go any farther away than our feet and see if we can really find ourselves in our feet. If we are not there, then at least we shall have discovered that we are not confined somewhere down in our shoes or in the bones or flesh of our feet. Through this kind of exercise, we shall come to the realization that the foot is not I, but mine. I possess my foot, but I am not in my foot. Let us continue the journey and go to the legs. Are we in the legs, or are they our legs? Are they not our vehicle, our possession, our instrument, the instrument we use at the moment for the purpose of walking? Let us be sure that we understand that we are not doing this just as a pastime. We are doing it because this little idea contains within itself the entire secret of life, as it has been revealed for thousands of years. The fact that we are not body, and we are not in a body. We go from the legs all the way through every member of the body until we reach the topmost hairs of our head. As we proceed, let us not hesitate to stop at any or every point and ask ourselves if this is I or if this is mine. Am I there? Am I in the muscles, the nerves, the stomach, the solar plexus? Am I in the heart, liver, or lungs? Am I even in the brain? Or is all of this mine? Is all this merely an instrument for my use? As we continue the search to find in what part of the body we are located, searching tirelessly, the revelation finally comes to us. I cannot find myself in this body. There is not a particle or part of this body in which I can find myself entombed. I am not there at all. All the time that I thought this was I, it was mine. I thought that when I looked in the mirror, I saw myself. But I never did. I saw only my body. I was not there. We must understand, of course, that was just two paragraphs. When you do it for real with yourself, you must take your time, each part of the body. Am I in my shins, my calves? Am I in my knees, my thighs? Like that. And pause at each one until you get the feel, no, I am not there. We must understand this basic premise thoroughly, because merely rehearsing it or agreeing with the author that we are not in the body will not be of much benefit to us. Why? Because agreeing with the author is agreeing intellectually. Yes, I can see that. I agree with that. That's not the same thing at all as the conscious awareness, I am not in this body. Actually, this body is an I. We ourselves must have the conscious awareness that we do not exist in the body, that we are not to be found inside the body. Search though we may, from our toenails to our topmost hair. Having reached this conclusion, the next thing we must ask ourselves is, since I am not in the body, where am I? Yes, that is the great mystery. Where am I? Who am I? What am I? One thing we shall immediately be sure of, and that is that we are not confined even to a room, and we are not confined to a body. The next thing that must come is, since I am conscious of my body, and I am conscious of this room, and I am conscious of this building, and I am conscious of my home, and I am conscious of my family, and I am conscious of my friends, and I am conscious of my business, then it seems to me that all I find is that I am conscious of this. I am conscious of that. I am conscious of the other. What is there to me but this consciousness? Proceeding along these lines, we find that our business is our consciousness of business. Our home is our consciousness of home. Our body is our consciousness of body. None of these things exists separate or apart from our consciousness, from our conscious awareness. None of these things exists outside our consciousness. None of these things exists outside the government and the power of our consciousness. We learn, moreover, that the body exists only at the standpoint of our consciousness. If we were not consciously aware of the body, we would not have a body, or it would not be of any use to us, because we would not be conscious of it, and therefore would be unable to use it. Only that of which we are conscious is important in our experience. When we have no consciousness of body, it is as if we did not have a body, and we lose all interest in it. If we have no consciousness of our bank account, it ceases to be of any use to us. All the money we might have in the bank would be of no avail if we did not have the conscious awareness of that bank account, where it is and what its purpose is. Without this awareness, even a bank account would be of no value to us. Now, if you've ever been knocked out, whether in a fight or on the operating table, during surgery or during some dental work, you are unconscious. You are not conscious of anything. Although some people have proved by an out-of-body experience that they are still conscious, because they're able to report everything the doctor said and did. All right. I think that's enough time spent on this. If we do not have a conscious awareness of the presence and the power of spirit, it does no healing work for us. So it's a combination. It's not just spirit does it. It's spirit and my conscious awareness of spirit. That is the reason one person is able to do successful, beautiful healing work while another fails. The only difference is that one has a conscious awareness of the spirit which does the work, whereas the other has not yet attained that conscious awareness of the spirit. It takes a conscious awareness of the presence to do the work. Everything in this life is dependent upon our conscious awareness. It is logical, therefore, to say all there is to us is consciousness. All we are is consciousness, our conscious awareness. The next section is called Developing Spiritual Consciousness, or Developing Spiritual Conscious Awareness, or Developing Spiritual Awareness, or Developing Spiritual Discernment. Our great purpose in life should be the development and unfoldment of our spiritual consciousness or spiritual awareness. For that purpose, it becomes necessary for us to begin with the knowledge that we are not feet, legs, or torsos. We are a state of consciousness, appearing to the world as body. We are infinite consciousness, we are divine consciousness. Apart from consciousness, we are nothing. But as consciousness, we are infinite. This we must understand. It is absolutely necessary first to understand that we exist as consciousness, and secondly, to become consciously aware of this reality of existence. As we look out through our human eyes and see only so much bone or so many pounds of flesh, then of course we cannot be satisfied with ourselves or with life. As we learn, however, through our developed spiritual consciousness, our awakened consciousness, to behold Him as He is, then we shall begin to see that we are not flesh and bone, we are consciousness. We can be satisfied with that likeness. That is the reason the Infinite Way teaches us never to look at a person, but to look through him, especially through the eyes, where we can catch glints and glimpses of that light, which is the reality of being. We are consciousness. You are consciousness. I am consciousness. In proportion as we become conscious of one another, as we really are, then we enjoy one another, and each one of us takes his rightful place in the scheme of things. Have you been doing that? Have you been looking through the person? When you go to the post office and there's a note in your box to come up to the counter and get a package, and you go up to the counter and you look at the lady or the man and you say, "I have a package." Are you looking through them, or are you looking at the body? Because he says, the Infinite Way teaches us never to look at the person, but to look through him, through the eyes. Physical or mental healing is based on the belief that we exist somewhere between our feet and our head, and it attempts to do something about a physical existence. Spiritual healing has an entirely different basis. Spiritual healing is dependent on the individual's becoming consciously aware of the truth that we do not exist in the body or as the body, but that we exist as infinite divine consciousness. Jesus did not say that he was the body. He said, "I am the life." He did not say that he knew the truth. He said, "I am the truth." When we begin to understand what this means, "I am life eternal, I am the truth," then we can also see that the body or anything else, music, painting, sculpture, literature, even pets, I'm going to add because I'm looking at one, can be the subject and the object of our consciousness. And we can come into an awareness of it as it is, not as it appears to be, or to the unillumined or ignorant sense, but as it really is. Here's the great wonder of the world and of this work. There is a Christ. Whether we call it the Christ of the Christians, Emmanuel of the Hebrews, or Tao of the Chinese, there is a Christ. That Christ is infinite, invisible, presence, and power. It is actually the seat of our being, the center of our being. It is the one divine individual reality of each one of us. But to experience the presence and power of the Christ, it is necessary to be consciously aware of the Christ. There it is again, consciously aware. I wonder how many times he's saying that in this chapter. It's necessary to be consciously aware of the Christ as the reality of our being, as the seat and source of our intelligence, our eternality, and our immortality. So, from this time on, it will be less than useless for us to talk about the Christ, or about God, or about Spirit, or even to read inspiring writings about God or about the Christ. We have been through thousands of years of hearing about God. And praying to God and expecting to meet God in the next world. From this point on, the time has come for the actual realization and demonstration of God. We are making an about-face, and we are recognizing the I am-ness of the Christ. We are recognizing the presence of eternal life here and now. Not in some future event, and certainly not in some past event, which has gone beyond the possibility of recapturing. Our work lies in attaining the I am-ness of the infinite Christ. Christ has always been the infinite invisible divinity, but we now come to the conscious awareness of the Christ as the foundation of our health, as the foundation of our wealth, as the foundation of the happiness of our home. All right. In my work, he says, the treatment is always this, realization of the Christ. When I sit quietly and peacefully in a receptive state of consciousness, sooner or later I feel something within that I know to be the divine presence, the Christ. And I find that it, that presence, that Christ, meets all of these claims. whether they are mental, moral, physical, or financial. It itself enters into human relationships, bringing peace where there was strife. That is, when that peace is desired. Many times people do not want the peace of the Christ. They want their own human will satisfied. They may want to see a fight settled amicably. But they want it settled on their own terms. A person may want his health, but he wants it, not the way by which the Christ may bring it to him. In anyone the Christ touches, it always dissolves the elements of sensuality, envy, jealousy, or malice. The Christ very often operates in our consciousness to dispel even inherited or environmental traits which are not conducive to spiritual living. But many people do not want that to happen to them. They want to hold on to their lust for power, their lust for place, their lust for money, or their lust for something else, and yet expect to get their healing too. They want the healing, but they do not want to surrender the personal sense of self. Yes, that's the whole crux of the problem. Oh yes, I want my healing, but don't mess with my finances. Yes, please heal me of this lack and limitation, but don't make me pour out to the world. I don't have anything. This does not mean that in our practice of the infinite way, an attempt is made to discover what is erroneous in an individual's thought and then try to correct it. No, no, no. Never would we be guilty of trying to find out what error lurks in another person's thought. But by abiding in the spiritual sense of truth, harmony, and peace, whatever of material or mortal sense exists as a state of thought is dissolved. So the treatment, therefore, for anything and everything is peace. Be still. That is all. Just those words, peace, be still, are enough if they come from a state of consciousness, from a conscious awareness, which is at peace and which has found the center of its being. If I were to try to correct something in your mind or your body, the treatment would fail. If, however, I forget the world and what is called form, find my center of being, find my peace there, find the realization of the Christ, then quickly the answer comes, I have been helped or I am healed. It was not anything which I knew or any power which I of myself possessed. It was this Christ. I hope that's clear for everyone and for all time. There's only one healer. It is this Christ. And more than that, it is your conscious awareness of this Christ. It's not just Christ, it's your conscious awareness. If we do not have the consciousness of the presence of the Christ, we lack the one element which does the healing work. The Christ is always present with us. The Christ is the reality of our being. But the need is for the conscious awareness of the presence of the Christ. And we develop that through studying and hearing the Word, through coming together with other students, and by the revelation within our own being brought about through meditation. Reading, association with others on the path, and meditation bring us to that state of consciousness where all of a sudden the inner realization comes and the Christ unfolds and discloses its glory to us. That's just fabulous. That's where we're going to stop for today. Because we're coming up on an hour. So let us be still and see if there's anything we have left out. All right. We established that we are not in a body. We own a body, we have a body, we use a body, but we're not in a body. I look into the mirror, I see a reflection of a body, but I am not there. Where am I? Well, I am consciously aware of the body. I am consciously aware of this room. I'm consciously aware of the air conditioner. I'm consciously aware of the computer. I'm consciously aware of the mouse. And I'm consciously aware of my cat. Therefore, I must be that which is consciously aware. And the only thing that can be consciously aware is consciousness. Consciousness. And so I am not in a body. The body is in my consciousness. And so I turn within. I pull back within, as far deep down as I can, to the very center of being. And my conscious awareness of this presence, my conscious awareness of consciousness, is Christ. I, Christ, and my Father are one. All that the Father has is mine. All that the Father is I. So yes, I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. Come within here, rest here. Find your inner peace. And know, I have come that you might have life, real life, eternal life. I have come that you might know the truth, which will set you free. I have come that you might be consciously aware of my presence, the presence of Christ. Here I am. I am here. Rest in me. Well, until next week, I love you ever so much. May you each individually come into the conscious awareness of Christ, the Christ of you. Thank you.